It's 1:15 here on Giant 90.9. That can only mean one thing. Your host, Jackson White, is alongside Owen Pulley in HD1 Studios, and it's time for the Sports Spotlight!
Bam, bam, bam. And the siren sound.
That's
and
an air horn.
Back. Air horn, firework, whatever. Do the fireworks too.
You mean to do fireworks?
Yeah. So, hey, there we go. Welcome back to the Sports Spotlight. It is May 10th, the magical day, May 10th, year 2022. I'm your host, Jackson White, here with the one and only Owen Pooley. How's it going, Owen?
It's going good. It's going.
It's definitely going. But we have a good show coming your way here. As you can already tell what the show is, if you follow us on Twitter, go ahead and shout that out, Owen.
The S underscore Spotlight.
Yeah, so just follow us on Twitter. Yeah, we can get everything. We ran a poll earlier today. I did, at least. And it was about the Colts. Or recently, the Giants released a James Bradbury, right? And that's a cornerback, a Pro Bowler for the Giants. And 63 people voted. And the Colts have been linked back to Bradbury now for at least the recent memory. 63 people to vote. I said, would you be interested in the Colts picking up a cornerback like James Bradbury? And 90% of the people said yes. So, I mean, do what the people say. 63 total votes. But we have a good show coming your way here in a couple minutes. Greg Rakestraw is going to be joining. Greg Rakestraw is going to be joining. Clap it up.
And we did have we have another reason to clap it up. We had a special guest off air. Former Sports Spotlight co-host Kevin Gleva was on the phone with us, and we caught up with him. So clap it up for Kevin Gleva. And he said he's listening right now. So
hey, shout out former member of the show who was released, Kevin Gleva. But we have a good show coming your way here in a few minutes. Greg is going to be joining us. But Owen, so how you been? How's it going? Obviously, the WBDG Marathon, something we talked about last Thursday, happened. It was extremely successful. Owen, did you have fun doing the marathon?
Yeah, I had fun doing it. It was pretty cool doing it. Granted, I can only do one day of it because I had baseball on Saturday. But yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. We have a good show coming your way here in a few seconds. But Owen, before we started off with football, obviously there's some stuff going on in baseball. What's going on there? Any MLB news?
It's just kind of going normal right now. Nothing over the top in the news. Nothing sports spotlight worthy. But baseball's in season, so let's go baseball, I guess. You know?
Yeah. So here in just a few seconds, Greg Rakestraw is going to be coming on to join us here. I'm going to try to call him here in a second. So, Owen, while I'm doing that, go ahead, and if there's anything you'd like to talk about on the show, you can mention real quick, given your own little spotlight here.
Oh, the own sports spotlight? Might as well just introduce Greg Rakestraw. You know, does a lot of broadcasting and stuff like that. Vice president for the ISC Sports Network. Did all that there. And does a lot of stuff for the high school community. So we're going to get Greg on here. And I called him Greg. I introduced him as his first and last name. Greg Rakestraw. I'm going to get him on here and interview him there. So... All right, we're going to get Greg Rakestraw coming on here, Jackson, getting him.
Hello, welcome back. We'd like to welcome now into the show, Greg Rakestraw. Welcome back.
Hello, my friend. You counting down the days of graduation?
Yeah, I'm getting there. I think I got 3 weeks left, so I'm just counting them down.
And is that mullet still as glorious as ever?
Oh, yeah, I just got it freshly cut for prom, so I'm looking good.
You may have the best mullet photo for prom since 1989. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Oh, yeah. But, Greg, once again, thanks for joining us. I think this is your third time on the show. It's been a bit since we've last seen you.
Well, I'm sure my jokes will be just as lame as they were the last time. Thanks for having me back on the program.
What do you mean lame jokes? Your jokes are always good.
Well, I appreciate that, but you're saying that like your grade depends on you, like you have to laugh at my joke, but I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Easter grades us off strictly laughing at your jokes. But
good. All right, then you'll get A-pluses today, boys. I feel confident in it.
Hey, there we go. But, Greg, as we last talked to you, we talked to you before the Colts' collapse of last season. And whenever we were last talking to you, we thought the Colts had a realistic chance to obviously make the playoffs and continue to go up, possibly winning playoff games. And obviously we know what happened towards the end of the season. They collapsed. They fell apart. And since then, lots of changes have happened with this team. As we talked about on our show here, Carson Wentz is now in Washington. Matt Ryan is here now in Indianapolis. So lots of stuff has happened with the Colts. What is your thoughts on the overall offseason so far for the Colts?
I think they're a better football team. And I think that there is a clear upgrade at the quarterback position. I don't want to put all of the blame for the last couple of losses of the season on the quarterback, even though I think the quarterback position largely needed to be changed. The offensive line that you have invested heavily in did not play well enough at the end of the year. There were clearly holes or a lack of talent at wide receiver, and I think that's been addressed to some degree. I'd still like to see a little bit more investment in terms of that position. But let's face it, if there is one position where you have to be good, it has to be at the quarterback spot. And I do think that maneuvering out of Carson Wentz and trying to get what is left out of Matt Ryan, which could be 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, I think the Colts are better at the most important position in all of sports. I like the draft that they had in terms of kind of checking off boxes along the way. So I think they're good. I think the Titans have come back them a little bit, but some of the moves, you know, that they have made. So I think you should feel good right now if you're a Colts fan. Are you as good as the best teams in the AFC? We'll see. But everything in football always starts with, can you win your division? And if you win your division, you are guaranteed to get a home playoff game. And as we're sitting here having a conversation on May 10th, I feel good about the Colts' chances to win the AFC South, and that's always where you begin your season planning.
And, yeah, I mean, obviously during the draft, it seemed like the Tennessee Titans got worse at some positions. The Titans have had kind of a quiet offseason, and then in the draft they traded away Pro Bowl receiver A.J. Brown, and it just seems like the Colts are really the team propelling towards the top, and the Titans are falling down. The Colts are younger. They obviously now have, I think, the best quarterback in the division, and that's, the like you mentioned, the most important position. So, I mean, this is the Colts' division to lose.
I think so. Now, again, I don't think the Titans are just going to go away because Derrick Henry is really good. I think Ryan Tannehill is a good quarterback for what they want to do. And I'm not so sure philosophically that I don't agree with long-term what the thought process was in trading A.J. Brown to Philadelphia, getting back a first-round pick, knowing what Brown was going to command on the open market for his second contract. So I'm not trying to paint the Titans with the brush of ineptitude, but I do think that in the short term, they take a bit of a regression. So I think they back up a little bit, and clearly I think, you know, the Colts made a 2-3 win upgrade in terms of the quarterback position. And if you do that, you go from 9-8 to say 11-6 or 12-5. I honestly believe that 11 or 12 wins is likely what would win the AFC South this year.
Well, obviously, I think if you had that, I mean, the Titans were the one seed last year, but the thing is that a lot of people have said and mentioned the Colts obviously now have a new defensive coordinator in Gus Bradley. And their defense has really got an overhaul. They traded away Rocky Asin for Ngakoue, a proven pass rusher. Struggles in the run, but I think players around him will help him in the run game. You get an all-pro corner in Stephon Gilmore, who's obviously had a bad season last season, lots of injuries, but hopefully in this new scheme will play better. I mean, this team continues to get better. They had a really good draft. I'm a big fan of everyone they drafted. I like Pierce as a receiver, Nick Cross as a safety to help that safety core as well. They also got that tackle, too. His name is leaving me. But, I mean, the draft overall was good, even though they did not have a first-round pick.
Bernhard Raimann is the left tackle you're referencing, young man from Austria that played at Central Michigan. And I think he will compete for the left tackle spot with Matt Pryor this coming year. And, again, I worried a little bit about left tackle, and I also worry that You know, while Jack Doyle's effectiveness as a receiver maybe had started to wane, he was still one of the best blocking tight ends in the National Football League. And I often joke that if needed, he could play left tackle. You know, if your left tackle needed help, you just attached 84 to that guy's hip, and you were going to be okay. So not having him there is a little bit concerning. Let's go to the defensive side of the ball. They have a home run hitter in all three levels. Yannick Ngakoue, team him up with DeForest Buckner, and the fair-to-expect progression for whatever Kwity Paye and Dio Odengbo are going to turn into, it's fair to assume that you're going to make your best jump as a football player from year one to year two, and that Odengbo has a healthy offseason, which he clearly did not have last year. You knew you were getting damaged goods, and whatever he was going to do for you last year was honestly going to be a bonus. So I do think that the defensive line position has been significantly upgraded. At corner, I think this is probably gets more media attention than, say, the Xavier Rhodes signing did a couple of years ago, where the Colts got what was left out of Xavier Rhodes in terms of his top football for a year, maybe a year and a half. And even if Xavier regressed last year, he was clearly better than anything else that you had. Gilmore could be in that group. I saw that Zach Kiefer had a note in The Athletic today that if you had one big need for the Colts, and to me this tells me the Colts are in a good spot, but cornerback depth behind Kenny Moore as your slot, probably Isaiah Rogers as a starting corner on one side, Gilmore starting corner on the other side. They brought in another veteran kind of as that fourth cornerback, but they could use a little more assistance. Safety position I love because, frankly, I think Julian Blackman and Kari Willis are your starters. Obviously, Blackman popped his Achilles relatively early in last year. I think Cross is kind of a hybrid for you and a guy that you're developing long-term. Blackman's had two significant injuries now in the last 3 years, one of those being his last year in college football. He's kind of your insurance policy, backing up a safety position. And linebacker, they're set. And really, you know, they only really play two most of the time. So obviously that's Darius Leonard and Bobby Okereke, the linebacker position they did not need to touch. I feel good about this team defensively. Are they great? Time will tell. I think they're solid, and solid might be enough. There are still questions offensively. Again, do you have a left tackle? That's kind of a big stinking question. You know, is Pryor going to be the guy? Can Ryman be the guy? There are other positions. I think they're in good shape along the offensive line. At tight end, you know, I realize they drafted the kid from Virginia in Jelani Woods, but can Mo Alie-Cox step up and be that number one guy? Kylan Granson was a guy that barely caught your attention last year. What does he do for this football team? But I honestly think that the biggest question mark is still, hey, is there another veteran receiver that this team is going to go get? Because I've had these conversations before where if you look at the let's say five receivers going to make the team, that's kind of standard in the National Football League. Number one clearly is Michael Pittman Jr. Number five is Ashton Doolin because he is a guy that does specialty things for you, punt gunner on special teams, really good as a run blocker. They like him as an athlete. He kind of takes over what the Zach Pascal role was, where he's kind of he's the bottom end of the receiving core. Now, what happens guys two, three, and four? Is it Paris Campbell? Is it Mike Strawn? Is it Desmond Patman? You know, guys along those lines. Do you bring back a T.Y. Hilton? Frankly, I think if T.Y. was going to play for the Colts, I kind of think he'd be on the roster, you know, already at this point. So I still think, knowing there's still some cap dollars out there, that you could see this team, maybe even in June or July, bringing in another veteran wide receiver to again, give this group a little more offensive spark. I think one more receiver might be the trick for this football team.
Yeah, obviously receiver was, top of their draft board. It had to be as they picked up Pierce early. But, like you mentioned, T.Y. Hilton has been rumored to still be in the running to come back. Reggie Wayne, now the receivers coach, and we know T.Y. and Reggie Wayne have a good
relationship.
There's the word. But other names that I've heard float around has been Julio Jones. He has chemistry with Matt Ryan. Jones is a guy who played in Tennessee last year, had moments but did not really play to a level that people thought of a Julio Jones type esque player. That's just a name that's been thrown out there. I mean, obviously, I think this group needs another veteran guy like you mentioned, but I just don't know what price a Jones would be. Obviously, T.Y. would come back decently cheap, but like you, I mean, it doesn't. I just don't know what's taking so long for them to re-sign T.Y. if he's still in the running to come back.
Correct. And as far as Julio Jones is concerned, the question to me is Jones willing to take a one-year prove-it deal with anybody? You know, because he has now played long enough, or financially he's set. And coming back for a couple $3 million compared to what he has made, I'm not sure I fault anybody for saying, I don't want to go through this. I'm taking care of my family for generations to come. Financially, you know, we're in very good shape. And so I understand it. If I'm the Colts, I'm a buyer on Julio Jones on a one-year prove-it deal, where clearly you're with the quarterback that knows how to get the most out of you. And to some degree, if he feels somehow wronged by Tennessee, he's got two chances a year to stick it to him by playing for the Indianapolis Colts. So to me, that's the question. Is he willing to play on that level of contract? If he is, I'd give the man a one-year audition. I wouldn't have any qualms with that.
Yeah, and I mean, he was banged up all last season. So who knows with a full, I mean, as of right now, I've heard he's healthy. So if he could come in and just give us 500 yards, that's really all they need. Hopefully Pierce can come back, and it's just that receiving core. I really hope Pierce is something big, because if not, we're going to be in the same position next season.
Right. Let's face it. You know, of every general manager slash front office seems to have a group they really hit on, and every general manager slash front office seems to have a group that for whatever reason they don't have much luck at. And obviously wide receiver has been a problem for this group. The lone exception is Michael Pittman. And, you know, I'm not trying to sit here and really, you know, give an attaboy to the Colts wide receiver position. No, it's a position of weakness. But I've heard a lot of talk saying, well, the Colts have a number one wide receiver. No, I don't believe that to be true. I think Pittman is a legitimate number one wide receiver. I think he is a big play threat. I think he is a guy you can build a wide receiving core around it. Now it's just a matter of, can you have the pieces that fit around him at that position?
Yeah, Pittman's a guy who I think could be a 1A. I need another 1,000-yard season out of him to make sure he's a clear number one. But with now Matt Ryan in the fold, I think it's just going to guys like Nyheim Hines, who have not mentioned. I think he is going to have a phenomenal season last year. He played really well with Phillip under the helm, and Matt Ryan's kind of like a Phillip Rivers in a way. I think he's right now in the state of his career in a better shape than Phillip was whenever he came in 2 years ago. So I think a guy like Hines is going to be more on the offense, and I think Taylor is also going to be used more as a pass threat more than just a straight running back than he was last season.
I hope so. And again, I agree with you on Hines. And again, he is a guy that is a massive difference maker for this offense. And again, just simply having a more veteran quarterback, he'll figure out a way to get Nyheim Hines more involved in the offense. I do expect a bounce back season from Nyheim Hines.
Now, Ray, kind of moving over to the quarterback spot here, coming from the wide receiver running back area. Now, the Colts obviously haven't had the greatest luck with quarterbacks in the last couple of years, averaging about a year per quarterback. So how do you think that Matt Ryan, with his age right now, will kind of, you know, do you think the Colts can get more than one season out of him?
Definitely. I think the Colts are expecting two and hoping for more. You know, the deal has been restructured to really kind of be a two-year deal for Matt Ryan, and that is the obvious need that this team has, because they have had now a different opening day starter every year since 2016. That's got to be rectified. And if this group felt that they could have won with Carson Wentz, they would have brought him back knowing that consistency was needed. For whatever reason, I think that feeling was, hey, they were best moving on, especially when they got the trade package they did from the Washington Commanders. Colts were quick to move at that point in time. But yes, that is clearly the goal. At least 2 years from Matt Ryan, and if they feel he's still solid after 2 years and he still wants to play, I think he'll have every opportunity to be the guy for this football team, let's say in 2024, if 2022 and 2023 go well.
One second.
Oh,
go ahead.
Now, kind of a follow-up question to that with the Matt Ryan playing in 2022-2023. Now, with my math could be off by about a year, but I do believe Frank Reich has not had a quarterback more than two seasons. I believe his 1 year with Luck was the year, was his last full season.
He's never had a guy every single year he's coached, he's had a different starting quarterback.
Okay. I couldn't remember if he had Luck for 2 years or just one. But let's say Ryan, I think he will, but let's say Matt Ryan goes one more year, 2023, maybe even 2024. How do you think that Frank Reich will kind of work? Do you think it will help a lot with another year with him and being able to work with him even more just instead of 1 year?
Well, let's face it. You've got about 40 years of NFL experience there because of, you know, Frank took a handful of years off or away from coaching before he decided to, you know, go back to football full time. But Frank played the National Football League for 14 years.
Right.
And so you've got two guys that have seen every NFL defense since 1985 that are working together. And so I'm not sure if it's a matter of Frank Reich really helping out Matt Ryan. I think it's having two guys that know the game so well that I don't think it's going to take long for the two of them to kind of almost think simultaneously. That Matt kind of is what you'd hope every quarterback is, almost a co-offensive coordinator. When Frank talked to the media a couple of weeks ago, right before the draft, and the team was just kind of getting started with their off-season team activities and workouts, and to hear him talk about how Matt was saying, hey, this is how we called this in Atlanta, this is how I would read this, can we tweak this in the playbook, you know, that he is already offering, hey, here's plan B, plan E, plan F, to a play that already has A, B, and C, and Frank's like, absolutely. That tells me that it's not like Frank has to mentor Matt or try to you know fix things in Matt Ryan's game. It's these two working in conjunction to make this offense the best it can be, and that's why I have confidence that again there is going to be significant improvement at the quarterback position.
So if you look at Matt Ryan, statistically, he's had over 4,000 yards now. He did not have it last season. He was almost there, just, I think, believe 40 yards short. But he has had 4,000 yards in consecutive seasons all the way going to 2010. So that is about 10 years of consecutive 4,000-yard seasons. And Carson Wentz obviously didn't get there. So Matt Ryan's going to get his yardage. Taylor last season had a phenomenal season. Do you think Taylor's production will go down at all with Matt Ryan under helm instead of Carson Wentz?
I think potentially just because this offense is going to be better at throwing the football. You know, as the season wore along, and let's face it, the Colts won a football game where Carson Wentz completed 5 passes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the last one of the year on December the 18th against New England Patriots. That doesn't happen in the National Football League. That sure as heck doesn't happen games that are played indoors. But that's the way the thing played out. And I think for the longevity of Jonathan Taylor, getting him a few less touches is the way to go. Now, let's face it. You know, last year, people were screaming early in the year that JT wasn't getting the football enough. That was not a problem deep into the season because the Colts were more reliant on him. I think you go back to seeing Jonathan Taylor with better ball distribution and more effective quarterback play. I do think you see Jonathan Taylor going back to having 15 to 20 carries a game, maybe 3 to 4 catches a game, but I do think you could see his total yardage numbers go down just because, again, this should be a more diverse offense, which is exactly what Frank Reich shoots for in terms of kind of ball distribution.
Oh, 100%. But we look at the AFC, and the AFC just continued to get better as the offseason went along. If the Colts were in the NFC right now, I think they'd have a realistic shot. I mean, NFC is rough. But the AFC is absolutely loaded. You could say 11 teams have a legit chance to win their division. And that's just something you do not see. Obviously, the Colts are in the weakest division of the AFC, with really only two teams having a shot of winning it, at least in this current moment. But the Colts, I mean, I've read a lot of articles, and I think people are starting to believe the Colts have a realistic chance to win not only their division, but get the number one seed in this AFC because all these other teams have to play all these rough teams twice a year, and the Colts are kind of going to be that team that doesn't have to face all the the amazingly good teams in the AFC this season, as they have, I do believe, the 30th worst best schedule.
Like they, it's not like they're playing the AFC West.
Yeah, so do you think the Colts have a realistic shot of making the one seed as all these other teams just beat up on each other?
To some degree, yes. And again, the scheduling gods in the Colts' favor, so let's explain this. The Colts get to play the NFC North this year, which means you got to play the Green Bay Packers, but you also get the Vikings, Lions, and Bears. That helps out dramatically. You know, obviously the Colts get the benefit of having both Houston and Jacksonville on their schedule twice. That helps out as well. Last year the Colts had the NFC West, which you could say was the best division in football a year ago. And so just not having that to play against clearly helps them out as well. So could all of that add up to give the Colts shot the one seed? Yes. But again, I can tell you the outlook from this football team is simply put, hey, win your division, and then let's see what happens after that. Because you know, if you win your division, you're guaranteed a home playoff game.
Yeah, and the Colts have – it's kind of crazy because the Colts have had some good teams since 2014, but they have not won their division since 2014 whenever Andrew Luck took them to the AFC Championship game and the Deflategate game and lost. So it's been a while since a division banner has gone up, even though I think those are silly. But this team, obviously Matt Eberflus went to Chicago, so he's no longer in the building. What do you expect from the Colts defense now with Gus Eberflus coming in? Not Eberflus, Gus Bradley. I mixed him up. But Gus Bradley coming in now to be the defensive coordinator. He was in Oakland last season. He was the creator of the Legion of Boom in the early 2010s with Seattle. Do you think he's going to bring in kind of his Seattle tendencies here to Indianapolis?
I always think it's much more about the players you have than the coordinator at this level. And that's not to knock on Gus Bradley or Matt Eberflus in any way, but you have 32 extremely intelligent football guys that serve the role as defensive coordinator in the National Football League. Everybody knows football like the back of their hand that coaches in this league. It is about the personnel that you have. And when you've got a Darius Leonard, all-pro level linebacker and playmaker, DeForest Buckner, all-pro level of defensive tackle, Yannick Ngakoue, probably the best individual pass rusher this team has had. Maybe you say Justin Houston at the tail end of his career, but probably the best you have seen since the late peak of Robert Mathis. So let's say in the last 7 or 8 years that you've had. Again, we'll see exactly how much Stephon Gilmore has, but probably best corner this team has had in some time. Kenny Moore was a Pro Bowl-level player last year. You give me that level of talent, I feel good about the defense. Do I think Gus Bradley is a solid NFL defensive coach? Yes, I do. But I really think it's 80% personnel and 20% coaching. And if that 20% makes a difference, great. But because the Colts have good personnel at most positions defensively, that's what I think is a difference maker for this football team.
Yeah, and the last season, as we saw in the fourth quarters, they kind of played that bend-don't-break defense. And I know how you like to say it's about the players, but Eberflus was calling defensive plays last season whenever they were giving up the big gains because they were the bend-don't-break. They were backing up 10 yards, giving them 8-yard passes every single play. And I think the Bradley's more of an aggressive defensive type of a coach. I think we're going to see more blitzes in the fourth quarter. Obviously, I think they might give up some bigger plays. The Colts didn't really give up big plays last season. And I think this year they might give up a few of those, but I think they're going to be flying over the ball. I think this defense is going to be extremely fun to watch.
Hope so. But you know what's fun? Winning. As long as this team finds a way to win, we're all going to be smiling about it.
100%. Even if it's ugly, 1-0. That's what they want to do every week. But, Greg, if you don't mind, if you have some free time, I would assume that you might. Do you mind talking about the Indiana Pacers?
Briefly, absolutely. Fire away.
So, obviously, draft lottery's coming up for the Pacers. Last time we talked, they were still going in their season, and we talked about, obviously, this team. That team was not good then, and they're not good now. The Pacers, I do believe, finished with the fifth best odds at the number one overall pick. The Pacers were not good last season. Haliburton came on towards the end of the year. This is probably their biggest offseason in recent memory, and they have they just released the draft lottery odds, and they have a 10% chance at a top three pick. Obviously, that depends on who they draft. This team has lots of holes. What do you think they're going to look at this offseason?
Literally, they are taking the best available player. I know that's draft cliche that makes you want to barf. I get that. But there's probably one position where you go, hey, we are definitively set. We know that we've got a building block at this spot, and that is at point guard. That's the whole reason you made that Domantas Sabonis trade. You are set at point guard with Tyrese Halliburton. I think T.J. McConnell backing him up means you're doubly set at the point guard position. Other than that, you're going to take the best player available to you, whether you're picking at 5, whether you're picking at 8, whether you're picking at 2, whatever the case may be. Because while you've got some other young pieces that you like a Chris Duarte, like an Isaiah Jackson, you've got some other veterans that we'll see what the future holds for them in terms of Malcolm Brogdon, Miles Turner, and Buddy Hield. Those are all guys that can help you win basketball games, but there's one guy here like this is a bedrock foundational piece for the future. Halliburton. That's it. So anybody 2, 3, 4, or 5, or you know, I'm not sure how much position basketball we play with spacing the court and facing up, et cetera. You can legitimately take the best player available to you with that single-digit draft pick, knowing you have not had a single-digit draft pick in your midst that you have drafted since Jonathan Bender. And yeah, on a technicality, that was actually the Raptors pick back in 2000, which is why you hear the stat trotted out that the last time the Pacers had a pick inside of the top 10 was George McLeod back in 1989, and none of you guys don't even know who George McLeod is. Most people my age don't know who George McLeod is. I'm enough of a dork where I at least remember George playing at Florida State before he didn't pan out in terms of being an NBA player. So it is simply you hope for the best, get your lucky rabbit's foot, whatever your good luck charm is, next Tuesday for the draft lottery because you like your player at 2 better than you would at 5, 6, or 7. But know that whomever you are picking, you will get a guy that can come in and help you right away from a talent standpoint because that player is going to get the opportunity knowing that you can kind of sculpt the roster around that player, thinking that guy's another bedrock foundational piece going forward.
Yeah, and one thing as the Pacer fans as well, we'll try to wrap this up, but the Pacer fans last season, they had their highs and lows. Obviously, pre-Sabonis trade, things are really boring. No one was going to the games. And after the trade, people at least started kind of paying attention to the team. Hopefully they can hit on a draft pick and eventually be back up top of the Eastern Conference standings. I mean, because it could be open here in a couple of years.
It could be, but honestly, right now the Pacers aren't thinking about anybody else. The Pacers are thinking about themselves. The Pacers are thinking, okay, you know, we have tried to rebuild on the fly and not be in the draft lottery and not had access to this level of talent in quite some time. And so this is really a time where you're not concerned about what the Bucks are going to look like or the Heat's going to look like or the Celtics are going to look like. This is all about how do we make the Indiana Pacers the best they can be going forward. Everything else is just window dressing for this franchise right now.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting what they do. And will they be competitive next year? I don't know. I would assume they're going to take just kind of another down year and then get another good player in, and then we'll see what they take on in the few next couple years. I think in the next 5 years, I think they're going to be back up top there, hopefully, if they can hit on these draft picks. But once again, Greg, thanks for joining us. It's been nice having you on this few times this year, and maybe sometime we'll talk again.
Sounds good, fellas. Take care.
All right, thanks for joining us. But once again, thanks for Greg Straw for joining us here on the Sports Spotlight. I'm your host, Jackson White, here alone for the first time in a very long time. It's kind of, delighted, you could say. I've always had someone else in here, but I'm here by myself for the remainder of the show. But we talked a little bit about the Pacers, the Colts, obviously. All this stuff will be posted on Audio Boom after the show. You can go back and listen to any part of this show that you missed and, just hear it back and see what we were talking about and at that current moment. And there's a lot of good stuff, lots of good stuff talking Colts, Colts off season and all. NBA draft lottery, I forgot to mention, it is next week today, I do believe. I think it's on a Tuesday next week, so we're 1 week away from the draft lottery, so we will talk about that in the upcoming Thursday. Not this Thursday, but the Thursday after that. But now we're going to the NBA playoffs as the final topic of the day. And the playoffs, it's going. Every team has won a game. going in here. So let's just go back. The last time we talked was last Thursday. There was not games on that last Thursday, but there is a game Friday, two games Friday, actually. So the 76ers and the Heat played. This was game three of this series. They've played four now, but let's go back to game three. The 76ers destroy the Miami Heat 99-79 in an impressive day. James Harden still did not play well, but Danny Green had 21 points. He caught fire at some points in this one. 76ers put on defense of masterclass versus the Heat in this game. Jimmy Butler played poor. He had 33, but he did not have any help, I should say. Kyle Lowry did not score in this game. And really, the only person to have double digits was Tyler Hero for the Heat as well. Harden had 17. We'll talk about him in a minute in Game 4. He played better than that. Another Game 3 as well. The Suns took on the Mavericks, and the Mavericks got their first win of that game as well. This is Game 3, not Game 4, by the way. The Mavericks won. Luka Doncic had 26. Jalen Brunson had his first-round heroics here in the second round, 28 points. The Mavericks had an all-around good game. All their starters scored over 10 except one. And the Suns, they struggled. Devin Booker had 18, did not play well. Chris Paul struggled as well, and they lost. All five starters had over 10, but they just could not hold Luka and Bronson. And now that series is now tied up. Well, we're going to talk about it in a second. Excuse me. I'm skipping to the point. But then we go to the Saturday. This was last Saturday, and the Bucks took on the Celtics, and the Bucks won on a 103-101 clip. Al Horford tried to tie it at the buzzer with a tip-in. It was too late, and the Bucks pull away with a win. They led at that time 2-1. The Warriors took on the Grizzlies 142-112. A blowout. Ja Morant in the fourth quarter got hurt. He did not play last night. We'll talk about that in a minute. But now the Warriors, going into Game 4, led 2-1, and we'll talk about their game 4 here in just a second. But Game 4 now for the Suns and the Mavericks, which was Sunday. The Mavericks got another win over the Suns, 111-101. And now the Suns and the Mavericks, this is a series to keep an eye on. Luka Doncic had 26 points, 11 assists, 7 rebounds. Bronson had 18. Finney Smith had 24, another really surprising player for Dallas. Dallas now with year one head coach, at least with Dallas, Jason Kidd. Kidd has had a really good season, I think, as a coach, and he's a guy who has kind of bounced around as a coach. He coached the Nets there for a while. He was the coach of the Bucks in the early Giannis years. He was an assistant for the Lakers last season, and now the head coach for the Mavericks. The Mavericks are tied up 2-2 with the Suns. And just in this game, Booker at 35. Paul struggled again. Only 5 points in this game. Ayton had 14. Bridges had 6, and Crowder had 15. But this series is the one to keep an eye on, because if the Dallas can win a game, Game 5 in Phoenix, Dallas has all hands on deck going to Dallas to take on in a Game 6 to win the series. I would not be surprised if the Mavericks win this series at all. And, the Mavericks, they have one of the best players in the playoffs. Let's just be honest, Luka Doncic. He is a generational player. And if I'm the Pacers, I want to draft the next Luka Doncic. It doesn't mean he has to be European, but a player who can come in and be an instant impact like Doncic has been to the Mavericks. And that's probably my series to watch out of the bunch, because it looked like Phoenix, they were up 2-0, that they'd be just the dominant team. They'd just sweep them, they'd move on, and they'd get a little bit of a break. But here come the Mavericks. But the Suns did this in round 1-2 with the Pelicans. They got up 2-0. The Pelicans won a few games. It got interesting, and then they blew them out again. The Suns have to win Game 5. Game 5 is a must-win for the Suns. If you lose that game, you lose the series, most likely. But now moving on to the other Sunday game, which was a good one. 116-108, the 76ers pulled out the second straight win in Philly, so the home teams are winning here. By the way, it really seems like the home teams are winning in every series but the Golden State one, as Golden State pulled off a game in Memphis. But Golden State is now 1-2 straight. We'll talk about that, what happened last night. But 116-108 in this one. James Harden finally came out of his shell, had 31 points, 9 assists, 7 rebounds. Harden finally played well. Maxey had 18, and Embiid at 24. Still injured, but putting it in there. Green at 13, Harris had 13 as well. But James Harden, a guy who we have been talking about on this show, is kind of falling off of late. He has not had over 20 points, in recent memory, at least very low into the 20s. But 31 for a guy in James Harden is impressive, because it just hasn't felt like himself. He was hitting step-back threes in this game, and if James Harden is on his A game, the 76ers have a chance to win a title. But if he's not, then they don't have a chance at all. It's that much of a difference. That's how much of a difference James Harden can make. And if he can be Houston James Harden or a shell, even 80% of Houston James Harden, this team has a chance because they have the best center in the league, Joel Embiid. The Miami Heat, Jimmy Butler at 40 points, but someone else has to step up other than Jimmy Butler. P.J. Tucker had 7. Bam Adebayo had 21, better than his 6 the prior game, but still not enough. Kyle Lowry had 6, and Struss had 6 as well. Hero had 11, Oladipo had 15. Someone is going to have to step up for Miami if James Harden is going to continue to play this well. Kyle Lowry, a guy who they gave up a good amount for. He only has 6 points, 7 assists. Yeah, that's okay, but you need Kyle Lowry to step up. He is shooting. He has made one of his last 15 threes. That is terrible. A guy who is known for shooting threes, only making one of his last 15, I'd leave him open. Because you have to be a consistent shooter in the playoffs. That's the most important time to hit your shots is the playoffs, especially a Miami team that got the one seed expecting to go far in this playoffs. If Kyle Lowry does not step up, the Heat have no chance of beating either the Bucks or the Celtics. We'll talk about that in a minute, though. And in all reality, I don't even know if they have a chance to beat the 76ers. Heat were up 2-0. It's now tied going back to Miami. That's going to be another series to watch. Oladipo, a guy who has been kind of like a back-and-forth player this playoffs, as he did not play in the first couple playoff games with Miami. He played in the back end of that series. He's played in this one all the way through, but he really, at times, he looks like he's going to break out, and then they just sit him down. It's a little confusing with Oladipo. He's a guy who I don't think is going to be on the team next year. I will believe he'd go somewhere for a little bit more money. But what is the value on Victor Oladipo? Remember when the Pacers offered him $25 million a year, and he said no? Well, he's never going to get that again. I can promise you that. He's almost 30. It's kind of crazy, Oladipo being 30. It just doesn't make sense. But he is. People age. But now moving to yesterday, 2 games were played, and the Boston Celtics took on the Milwaukee Bucks in Game 4 of this series. And boom, just like that, this series is tied as well. The Celtics were down at halftime, but had an incredible second half and a great fourth quarter. They won that quarter 43-28, and they won the game 116-108. The Celtics, impressive night. Al Horford, a guy who they got back in a trade. They traded him away because his contract is massive. He eventually found his way back to Boston, and he had 30 points and was really the defining factor in this game for the Celtics. He had 30 points, 8 rebounds. Jason Tatum also had 18. Well, 30, excuse me, Brown had 18, and Smart had 18 as well. The Celtics they only played 3 guys on their bench. Their starters did it all. Al Horford had a dunk on Giannis, and that was a pretty play. But the Celtics tied up this series, and they're a team that has played very well in the second half of the season, and they're playing well in the second half of this series. The Bucks, looking at them, Giannis had 34, 17 for Holiday, 16 for Lopez. Matthews had 12 as well. The Bucks went very deep on their bench to an extent. All players playing 1 minute, but only 3 guys as well coming off the bench. And Cunnington had 11, and George Hill had 5. Bobby Portis had 4. But this is another series. I mean, all 3 of these last series I've talked about, these are fun ones. They're all tied, and it all depends on the home team in Game 5. Because if you can win Game 5 as the home team, you have the series. If Game 5 is the most important game of a 7-game series whenever it's tied 2-2. Because if you go up 3-2, you have to win one of the next 2. So you can, basically, you just have to win 1 game of the next 2 games to move on. And if your team is down 3-2, you have to win 2 straight. So, obviously, you want to win them all. But Game 5 is extremely important for a team that is tied 2-2. And especially for the home team. You have to win in your home ground in any series. And doing it in Game 5 is important because you don't want to have to try to win a game away in the opponent's team stadium. But now going to the other game that happened, the late game. This game was the 10:30 last night, and the Warriors got an impressive win, 101-298 versus the Memphis Grizzlies. Ja Morant did not play in this game because he's out with a knee injury, but the Grizzlies still fought, and they've done that all season. This team is so young, they will be back. Let's just say it like that. But Curry had 32, Thompson had 14, Poole had 14 as well. Draymond Green had 2 points, but 11 rebounds. Andrew Wiggins had 17 as well. Otto Porter had 12. Looney had 8. And that was really it for the Warriors. And then the Grizzlies, they kind of went deeper on their bench, you could say. Obviously, Morant did not play in this one. They were led by Jaren Jackson Jr. He had 21. Brooks had 12. 10 for Steven Adams. Tyus Jones had 19. Impressive for Jones, really hopping in and filling that Ja Morant role. 19-6 for him is not that bad. And then Desmond Bane, the sharpshooter, had 8. Kyle Anderson off the bench in 23 minutes had 17. This was a good game. The Warriors, they won the last quarter. They won quarter 4, and that's the most important one of them all. They won by 3, but they won the quarter by 10. The Grizzlies had a really good third quarter. They won that one by 4, and they won every other quarter as well. So the fourth quarter, the Warriors came back and won it. They won by 3, and now this is going back. It's going to Memphis for game 5. And if the Warriors can close it out then, it's all power to them. Will Ja Morant play is the real question of this series. If Ja Morant does not play in game 5, I'd put all my betting odds on the Warriors. I know the Grizzlies have played well without Morant, but Morant is the heart and soul of this team, and without Morant, they have no chance of winning a playoff series, let's just be honest. They can be in a game. They have a really good game plan when Morant is out. A winning record by far when Morant is out. I do believe they went 18-4 or 18-2 this season without Morant, which is really good. I mean, give them credit, but Morant is the best player on this team. Let's just look at it. And they would not be in the situation without Morant that they are in right now. Morant, yeah, he's going to have to play in this series if they want to have a chance. And Stephen Curry's finally getting back on his groove. He had 32 last night. So that's going to be another series to watch. Golden State can close it out here, I do believe. Let's see when that is. Their next game will be tomorrow. So tomorrow, Wednesday, Golden State has a chance to close out the Grizzlies. But looking at today, there's two games tonight. The 76ers and the Heat, game 5 in Miami. This is a must-win for the Heat. If you win this game, you have a higher chance of winning the series. You're listening to the Sports Spotlight on WBDG FM HD1 Indianapolis. Jackson White here with you for the final half of the show. But this is a big game here. That's going to be at 7:30, 10 o'clock. The Mavericks and the Suns. This is in Phoenix. The Suns have played, let's just look at it. They've played poor. They have Chris Paul. He's going to have to step up. He had a really good game, too. I think he had 17 in the fourth quarter, 16, something like that. He played well. He hasn't even totaled 16 points in his last two games. He's going to have to step up. Devin Booker cannot do it all for the Suns. If the Mavericks can win this game in Phoenix, the Mavericks have all, they have all the momentum right now. They've won 2 straight. If you can win 1 in Phoenix, the Mavericks have a high chance of winning this series tomorrow. Bucks and Celtics game 5. It's going to be in Boston. For the Celtics, if they want to have to win, Al Horford is going to be the key player for them. Al Horford is a guy who, obviously, like we mentioned earlier just a couple minutes ago, was traded there basically for dead cap. No one thought he'd play. Robert Williams has been out in the last couple games with an injury. Robert Williams is a guy who's been kind of their shot-blocking center, but Al Horford played a big role stopping Giannis in the game last night. This will happen tomorrow, Wednesday, game 5 of this series. But Boston, you have a chance to win the series. And I think Boston, if they win this series, have a legitimate chance to make it to the NBA Finals. This is the NBA Finals for both these teams. I think the Finals contender will be in this series. I do not think Philadelphia or Miami has a chance to beat these two teams. Obviously, they have a chance if Harden's on his A game, and then maybe Miami can get some help for Jimmy Butler. But as it's looked right now, it's looking like the Bucks. And the Celtics, this could be the Eastern Conference Finals right here. Both, I think, are the two best teams in this whole conference. But, never underestimate Miami or Philly, but those are both two teams that are inconsistent, and both these teams are not. So we will see. Maybe Chris Middleton, who's out for the Bucks right now. That's why Milwaukee has been playing down. So we will see. Chris Middleton most likely not going to return in this series, but has a chance for the Eastern Conference Finals. If the Bucks get back him, just pinch him into the Finals. If Middleton can even give out 80% what he's doing, as a catch-and-shooter, knockdown shooter, I think the Bucks will be fine. But he's not going to be back, and that's when the Celtics have to get your prey and put him down when Middleton's out. But now to the other game tomorrow night, Warriors and the Grizzlies. This is at Memphis, and as I've talked about Morant, this is a must-play for Morant. If he does not play, I would put all the odds in the Warriors' hands. The Grizzlies, an incredibly good home team. Let's just put it out there. This team does not lose at home. They have a really good home record, and in all reality, they don't lose without Ja Morant. They lose without him. Well, they don't lose without him. I think 18-2 on the regular season. I think they were 2-2 this postseason without him, something like that. I'm probably wrong. Don't quote me on it, but something to that record. This team can win games without Ja Morant, but you're going against Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, who had an off game last game, and you still lost. I think this is Warriors series to lose. And, it's obvious. They're up 3-1. I would assume the Warriors pinch themselves in or check themselves in to the Western Conference Finals. Well, that's all we're going to talk about today. Then we'll talk about all the Game 5s that have happened next Thursday. Indiana not Indiana, the Indianapolis Grand Prix for IndyCar is going to be this weekend as well, Saturday. Sadly, I will not be able to attend the race as I have to do things with prom, so congrats to me, I guess. But there's still a lot to talk about going on with the Grand Prix as well. John Easter will join us this Thursday to talk about that. Owen Pooley will be back Thursday as well. And thanks for listening as we've talked Colts, Pacers, NBA playoffs, and some other things as well. So it's been fun. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next Thursday. Once again, we'd like to thank Greg Rakestraw for joining us and being a friend of the show all of the shows a year long. But thanks for joining us. We'll be back next Thursday.